today I'm in Box Vicarage with Lynn Godfrey, and I have given Lynn the questions. So she's had a quick chance to have a look at them today. So the first question is always, when and where did we first meet?
Well, if I remember correctly, it was on the Exploring Christianity course, although I've got a feeling that I'd met you before that, and that would have been in 2012.
Were you teaching at Cologne before I came on the Exploring Christianity course?
Quite possibly. I can't. Yes, I would have been, yes.
So I think I probably
met you there, yeah.
I probably saw you at school. I have memories of coming into the Exploring Christianity course and going, oh, it's, yes. And then not being able to remember your name, which is awful.
Not really. Why would you?
I see you shepherding small people into the hall.
Yeah, it's very small people.
Yeah, teeny tiny people. Mm. Do you drink tea?
I do drink tea, yes.
And what's your favourite cup of tea?
My favourite cup of tea is an Earl Grey. Can I have two favourites?
You can have joint favourites.
Joint favourites, peppermint and Earl Grey.
So do you have a tea schedule for what sort of time of day that you'd have tea?
Yes, probably in the afternoon and then again perhaps in the evening.
And peppermint after a certain time or just whenever you fancy it?
Just whenever I fancy it, yes.
Okay, so not strict?
No.
No. Some people on the project have had very strict until 12 and then till 3 and then after 3.
No, when I fancy it.
Mm-hmm. So the big question, which I'm asking everybody, is how do you respond to the statement Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
Yes, that's a big question, isn't it, really? A lot to think about. But I think my initial reaction is I'm very optimistic, actually, about Christianity in the UK, because I believe that while God's Spirit is still at work, then there's hope. And, you know, there'll always be hope of a revival. So maybe it's lying dormant rather than dying. But certainly I don't think it's gone completely. And I think people are interested. You know, when you do wedding ministry, funeral ministry, things like that, baptism, I think people are more interested often than they let on and have got a bit more of a background than they initially let you believe.
I think there's still a lot of questions in some ways about why people who don't come to church are still bringing their children to be baptised anyway.
Absolutely.
So there must be something that motivates them. You could cynically say it's the party, but they don't really necessarily need to have the baptism for the party, do they?
No, they don't. And even weddings. I mean, for example, my own son, or one of my sons, the one I least expected to marry in church, actually wanted to marry in church. It was important to him to marry in church. So there's obviously something of his upbringing still there, even though he doesn't go to church now regularly or at all, really. So there's obviously something in people's backgrounds, I think.
And the reason why I wanted to look at this question, so the statement isn't my statement, it was in the Telegraph a couple of years ago. And when I read it, I didn't know what I thought. So that's why I was interested in it, because the work that we do here is very much not to do with Sunday mornings, but that's a huge cultural shift. I can't get people to come to church on a Sunday morning at all.
No.
I mean, some come, but hardly any. But people come to all the other things through the week.
They do, and at St. Peter's, we started a messy church in September, and that's been relatively successful. Numbers dipped a bit during January, February, but started to go back up. And it was mainly to involve people without them needing to come into church, but to be feeling that we were sort of caring about them in the community, but not necessarily asking them to come to our formal services, but to come and join in something that was Christian-based, simple story, you know, simple worship songs and a meal. And for me, I think that's what Christianity is all about. It's about the fellowship and the relationship we build with people, not necessarily getting people in on a Sunday. hopefully that would happen. We can get people into services. But I do think that it's about relationship first and foremost.
Our church, which has a Mercy Church format, we've thought a lot about the fact that we're not trying to get people from there to a to another Sunday service, but that is church for them, and that's quite a cultural shift.
Yes, yes it is. And I think that's what, that was my thinking, that it would be church as a church. It would grow into its own congregation, you know, evolve into its own congregation. But we have to see where it goes.
Always have to see what happens. Plans God has, because they may not be the plans that we had originally. It's always an interesting thing to wait and see.
It is.
So I've got some more specialist questions for you. First one, because I was trying to remember, have you been ordained 3 years now?
2 years.
2 years. So priested this time last year.
Yeah.
So what's the best thing about being ordained?
I think for me, being affirmed in the God-given ministry that I feel that I've always had, although I didn't seek out ordination and it wasn't something I thought about, and in fact, I think I probably pushed it away for quite a long time, any thoughts of ordination, before I came round to God's way of thinking. But I think it is that, it's being affirmed in that ministry, in that identity, that rootedness in Christ, that just, you know, you've got, and God is wanting you to use, and there's a purpose to it. But I can't sort of really put it into words, it just takes it a step further. Being able to preside at communion, for example, there's something very special about that. Being able to sit with someone as a priest as they're dying. It just is, there's just something a little bit different. Something a little bit more that you can offer in some ways.
Did the way that people kind of treat you or behave towards you change when you were ordained?
For some people, yes, and I think that's partly because I'm an OLM, so I've come from the congregation, so I've been with my congregation for quite a long time, and they were with me from the very first. You know, they were in on the whole process of discerning whether it was right to go forward. And so I think that made it slightly more complex going back as a curate, because your relationships, the dynamics change.
I had a few odd encounters after I was ordained with complete strangers, members of the public, and I wasn't wearing my dog collar. And they just came up to me and started telling me things that I would not have expected them to tell a complete stranger. Did that happen to you as well?
Yes, it has happened to me. But in fact, I think that's something that's happened to me previously. People just seem to tell me things. I can meet a stranger, or it can be somebody perhaps I've known a long time, and they'll suddenly come out with something and I think, oh, fancy saying that now, you know. Or so yes, it has happened. And you know, when I've not been wearing a dog collar, people just tell me things. And I think that's because I've got a very pastoral ministry, even as an ordained person. My ministry has been quite pastoral.
Yeah. It's interesting. I was astounded, because I wasn't really sure what I felt about, you know, the priestly ontological change. And I had, within a month of being ordained, I had three very different sort of encounters with people where I wasn't in uniform at the time, and I was just, what has happened here? It was very odd for me.
Yeah, it is odd. And I think that the situations that God has led me into in those circumstances have also been situations where I've had to enter into the apologetic side of it all. Regarding a personal situation, I was able to walk alongside someone who hadn't told anyone else about her circumstances, but just dropped it into conversation one day. And I was able then to sort of pick up on that and say, this is my experience. It's tough as a mum, isn't it?
Mm.
And we went on from there. She'd never told anybody. And for something like 40 years, she's been sort of sitting on this and not ever telling anyone. And that was quite moving, actually. To be able to sit and listen and to be able to identify without saying, and she knew that I was identifying because she knew I was in a similar situation. And then the other side of that was a couple who then asked me about this particular issue, not the lady in question, but the issue concerned. And I found myself in a very different conversation with them.
I'm asking lots of priests this next question.
Yeah, that's
right. If you could change one thing about the Church of England, what would it be? And yeah, you just rolled your eyes, yes. Just one.
Just one, yes. I think I would like the Church of England to be more transparent. And I think that we need to be more honest and open about the things that are going on, not trying to sweep things under the carpet, but to have that integrity, actually, to stand up and say, yes, this is going on, but actually we're going to do something about it, and to be seen to be doing something about it.
Do you think sometimes people are too busy trying to be kind to everybody that actually they don't necessarily face up to the truth sometimes?
Yes, I do. Yes, definitely. And I think it's very difficult when you say, but what is the Christian thing to do? And it's not always to be kind, or sometimes you have to make hard decisions, you have to take tough action. And I'm not saying you have to be unkind to people, but sometimes things need to be dealt with.
Yeah, I mean, I was subject to issues around that when I was first ordained all those years ago, and it was very difficult. And sometimes there are legal reasons, obviously, why you can't say things as well. Yeah. And that just becomes more difficult for people, though, and I wonder how much sometimes people use that as an excuse, although it is really difficult. The next question was about the Exploring Christianity course, and I was talking to Michael about Exploring Christianity the other day on them, I saw him on Saturday, and I said, oh, I'm going to talk to Lynn, and he was like, oh, great. So what did you enjoy most about the Exploring Christianity course?
Well, I love the whole thing, really, but the thing that I really enjoyed most was the fellowship and the friendship that our group shared, because I think that we gelled very quickly, we got close very quickly, we remained close, and we still do. Even if we see one another or email or anything comes up, there is that very strong bond still. And I think that enabled us to share and to discuss in a very deep and meaningful way that perhaps you don't always, if there are people that you just feel a bit reticent about in the group, or somebody is always dominating, or there's somebody who never says anything. But I think we just gelled, and gosh, we grew, you know, in faith, and we could all disagree if we wanted to about things. It's okay to be different. And I think that was the thing we really felt, that whatever we put in the pot, it was respected, it was listened to, and we could understand one another's point of view most of the time, but it was okay to be different.
I thought it was a lovely group to come into. Michael and I were trying to remember how many sections I actually came into. I think it might only have been two, but it might have been three.
I think it was two or three.
So I remember coming into the ethics.
Yes.
And I think I did doctrine as well.
I think so.
But I might have done New Testament or Old Testament with you.
I think you did. I think you dipped in and out, yes, of one of the modules. Perhaps didn't do it all, but did several. But I seem to remember you being involved in two or three.
It was quite a challenge to go back to teaching it after a while, having not done much theology, being kind of really head into the rotas, I guess. Have you got a really good method sorted out to keep you theologically engaged now you're in ordained? I'm just asking for a tip here, really.
Well, no, I just tried to keep reading, and I set myself a goal last year that I would look at over the period of a year, hopefully, but I'm going to extend that due to circumstances that arose last year, the end of last year, personal circumstances. But it was a project looking at Mary, Mother of Jesus. I'd never really looked in any detail theologically, and so I'm on that sort of road, looking at that. So reading about Mary, reading what I can about theological concepts and constructs and all of that sort of thing. So it's interesting reading. And looking forward to getting back into it.
I found that certainly doing teaching was one of the things that gave me some discipline, and I led a few retreats as well, and that was really good for me to actually do that and to focus on different things. I'm assuming that when I come back from sabbatical that we're all going on a day retreat, and I think I'm going to use some of the material I used in Lent in that. So, looking at trees, but possibly spending quite a while on olive trees. I had a few thoughts about that.
Sounds interesting.
Well, we'll see. So the last question, which is the one that sometimes people find tricky, is what's your favourite thing beginning with T?
I didn't find that tricky at all. I immediately thought, talking. I love talking.
Yeah, no one said that yet.
Talking and travel jointly.
That's really interesting. Why has nobody else said that?
I don't know. Maybe they're a lot deeper than me. Perhaps I'm just shallow.
No, they're not. They're not. Because we've had turtles and trampolining all sorts of things. But we've not had talking. Do you think it's a prerequisite for someone who's a vicar to be able to manage talking?
Not necessarily, but I think it helps. I think if you can engage, particularly in small talk, and you can feel comfortable in anyone's company, regardless of status or anything else, I think if you can feel comfortable and you can engage in small talk, I think it helps, yes, definitely.
Because I turned up at a service last night without any serious planning, and because I can't go to church in my home church at the moment because I'm on sabbatical, I went to this service, and one of the people who I think had been on our Exploring Christianity course was giving the talk, and I was like, oh, that's really good. And I just turned up basically because I have senior disease now, and I knew the person who was presiding would be able to sort that out for me without any problem, which sounds not necessarily a very theological basis for deciding what service you're going to, but I just thought that will be fine. And then I was so delighted to hear her talk. I think she probably hasn't done that much speaking in that way, but what she said was really good, and I'm just so pleased to hear her there.
Oh, good.
That was really good.
So is that what you meant by a prerequisite?
Well, to talking, no. I mean, there's pastoral talking, and there's being able to speak in bigger situations, because you never know how many people you're going to have to speak to at any time.
That's true.
But I think what you said about being able to talk to anyone is really important. We used to have breakfasts here at St Thomas's, and we had people coming to visit us before a baptism, and the family came, and they couldn't. The husband, he was their Forces family, and the husband was having a lot of trouble watching two of his senior officers wiping down the tables at their breakfast. And I'm like, I actually said to him, "No, this is our church. You leave your rank at the door."
Mm.
And I kind of think that's what we're about, yeah. Really.
I think so. And I think, you know, think of pastoral situations. I've been in the sort of pastoral occasional offices, and the importance of being able to talk to everyone and make them all feel valued, actually, and not left out. And to sort of look as well for those people who are on the sidelines, and perhaps go and just have a chat, draw them in a little bit. I do think it's important to make people feel welcome. Goes back to that relationship for me again. It's all about relationship, really.
And that was what Jesus always got into trouble with his disciples for, wasn't it? Talking to people they thought he wasn't supposed to be talking to. So, you know, children, women, Samaritans, all these people that he shouldn't be talking with, but he was. Lots of interesting things to think about there. So, Lynn, thank you ever so much for coming today and speaking to me at Box Vicarage.
You're very welcome. Thank you.